G'day humans, welcome to the safe space for dangerous ideas, and what a doozy of a dangerous idea we have for you today, which is quite peculiar, because I can actually imagine an alternate universe in which this idea is not controversial at all and is open to rational conversation, the likes of which we're having here today. Well, we don't live in that world. We live in a world in which conversations like this are regarded as beyond the pale by at least half the population and probably 99% of journalists and media institutions who aren't co-opted by the conservative reactionary right. And it's quite peculiar because the question is pretty simple. The question is, should biological women, people who were assigned female at birth, that is, have a right to organize themselves and create spaces for themselves that exclude women who were assigned male at birth and have transitioned? Now, even just my introducing the topic using that language will immediately alienate a certain proportion of people who are very exercised about this issue, namely people who perhaps sometimes carry the label of TERF or trans-exclusionary radical feminist. That's because I use the language assigned female at birth and assigned male at birth. And I want to make clear why I use the language I do here. The language, a person being assigned male or assigned female at birth, is the language that is preferred by transgender activists and transgender people. And I use it not because I necessarily agree with the language, but because my job, as I see it, is to unite the largest number of people around a common conversation and to speak in ways that don't immediately put on the back foot some cohort of people who I want to actually be winning over. So I want you to listen to this regardless of what side of this debate you're on or whether you're just curious and in the center with as generous a mind as possible. And hopefully we can all grope towards some kind of resolution to this question. It's coming up now because there's a big court case in Australia this week, a big court case that you wouldn't know existed if you listened to mainstream media and watched mainstream television and read the mainstream press, because nobody wants to talk about it. It's quite baffling. Conservative reactionary pundits like to talk about it, but mainstream media institutions, especially ones that consider themselves on the left and on the right side of history, and especially ones that consider themselves allies of women and feminists, are not interviewing the individual we have on today who is the target of the litigation, Sal Grover. The contours of this particular case will become apparent as I speak to Sal. I don't need to outline them here. But basically, the question that is being challenged in the Federal Court of Australia is the question of whether or not a trans woman, in other words, an individual who was assigned male at birth and subsequently went on to transition to being a woman, has the right to sue a private organization for excluding her on the basis of the fact that she wasn't assigned female at birth, wasn't born biologically female. And this raises questions for women's rights, of course. We see this all across the sporting industry, where questions about whether or not people who went through puberty as biological males and subsequently transitioned should be allowed to compete against people who have been assigned female all their lives. We see it in the case of prisons and women's rape shelters and safe spaces and so on, whether or not women who have biological male genitals or genitals associated with males, perhaps I should say, should be allowed into women's safe spaces. And the deafening silence from the mainstream press about whether or not this is an issue worth covering is just extraordinary. I mean, you know, just recently a presenter on the BBC was trying to explain this issue and said in passing, trans women, and then he said, in other words, biological males, he almost lost his job. I mean, he was formally reprimanded and he was suspended because he was seen to be taking a partisan position. What he was doing was stating a biological fact. He wasn't necessarily saying that he concurred with the conclusions of anti-trans people. He was just trying to clarify for the viewer, who might not be quite as online and agitated by social justice issues as the activists are, what he was meaning by the term trans woman. It's so perilous that people are tiptoeing around it and really just ignoring it because it's more hassle than it's worth. I mean, when I was on the ABC, it was at a time when Britain's largest gender clinic, the Tavistock, was closed amidst a huge controversy in the United Kingdom after a government inquiry had found that it was being too hasty in providing affirmative gender care to young gender dysphoric people. In other words, it wasn't doing enough to examine whether or not there was a depression, anxiety, autism, any other psychological condition going on among young people, especially teenagers and preteens who would come to the clinic claiming to be of the opposite sex. It was hurrying them too quickly with inadequate investigation down the gender change or gender affirmation, as the activists like to call it, pathway. And nobody at the public broadcaster in Australia covered this story. When Media Watch, the watchdog, asked why News hadn't covered it, they said, oh, well, it's a foreign story, so we didn't think it was relevant, which Paul Barry, the host of the Media Watch show, the kind of ombudsman of the media, did not buy, making the point justifiably, I believe, that if it was any other major cultural shift in British policy, then the Australian public broadcaster would note that and would perhaps add a line about how, well, maybe things are done differently here and this doesn't reflect the way things are done. But you'd interview a local person and you'd say, how do we do things that are differently from the Brits? Does this have any flow-on implications, any ramifications for how we do things here? You know, it would be a we do it all the time as journalists. Something major happens in a similar allied country abroad, so we re-examine whether or not we're doing things the right way here. We didn't do that at the time. And in fact, the only show on the ABC that touched this was my radio show, where I interviewed the head of the Psychiatric Association, who has some concerns in Australia about whether or not we're too hasty in affirming the changed gender of children with gender dysphoria. And he said on my radio show, and indeed they played this clip on Media Watch, the Ombudsman TV show, he said, I feel like the girl at a high school party who's never asked to the dance, and no one at the ABC asks me to dance, and so I'm grateful to finally being asked. Someone has finally asked me to dance, Josh, which made me feel sad. I mean, somewhat a little bit, tiny bit proud when the bar is that low, but sad that I belong to a profession which has been so routinely ignorant of this. I mean, you look up, you know, transgender rights in the UK, for example, and the first page on Google is a New York Times article, opinion, how British feminism became anti-trans. Then the Times of London, inside the TERF wars, that's trans-exclusionary radical feminist wars, tearing The Guardian apart. Then there's a Vice article, TERF war, transphobia in the British media, gender critical feminism and its effects on Britain. Then Pink News, transphobia scholar explains why the UK became TERF Island and it's eye-opening. Vox says J.K. Rowling's transphobia is a product of British culture. OpenDemocracy.com has an opinion piece, why as an American transgender woman I don't feel it's safe to visit the UK. I mean, hysteria much. This should be a cool, calm, collected, rational conversation about human rights and gender rights. And that is the circumstance under which the Federal Court of Australia will be hearing this case. It has landmark implications for women's rights and for trans rights, and therefore for all human rights, really. Like I say, every time anyone tries to touch this, they get piled on, often they get doxxed, which means that their personal details, their private details, their home address and so on gets exposed online by social media activists who regard them as being guilty of peddling hate speech. Anytime you talk to people like the guest I have on today, you're accused of platforming people who are guilty of hate speech. You're accused of calling into question human beings' right to exist. I mean, I recently proposed a conversation about this particular issue, about how to juggle the competing rights of women's safe spaces with the rights of trans women to be included in society. And I was told by a very important person that we don't have conversations which call into question people's right to exist. Well, that's a convenient way of shutting down the conversation before you even have it, isn't it? So I'm glad that I'm now independent and able to have these conversations. I urge you to listen to this conversation with as compassionate a heart as you can, regardless of which side of the aisle you come from. I understand that it's going to antagonize a lot of people. That's not the intent. The intent is to wrestle with some level of courage with an issue that is going unremarked upon too often because there's a heckler's veto, a terrorist veto, if you will, that cows people and prevents them from having an honest conversation about this stuff. Let's wrestle with this in a spirit of goodwill. I hope you enjoy this conversation with the one and only Sal Grover. Yes, okay, so Monday or Tuesday that you're in court?
Tuesday it all kicks off.
Yeah, okay, Tuesday, and you're coming to Sydney on Monday. How are you feeling?
I'm incredibly anxious, in part because of what I would deem sort of the ridiculousness of the whole thing. Like when you've got in one sense it's so important, and then the other side other part of you is going, but this is so obvious and stupid. So it's a real conflict in your mind. And it's also been 2 very long years leading up to this. So this has consumed my life for 2 years. And so for it to go to court and to have this week, it's a lot. But at the same time, yesterday, the UN Special Rapporteur released the thing statement, and it's already gone to the Australian Human Rights Commission saying, like, sex is biological, women are adult, human female. So that made me feel really good.
So the United Nations is chiming in. Is that because of the context of your case?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. So part of our defense is a constitutional challenge because of based on the amendment. So
actually, before we get to this, let's go back to the experience. And I know you've probably said it a million times, but it has been strangely overlooked in the mainstream media. So there are probably people hearing this for the first time. Tell us what happened from your perspective, and then we can talk about the legal challenge. Okay. I spent last night poring over Federal Court of Australia documents to try to understand the legal questions here, which are more complicated, as they always are in court cases, than one might initially assume. So what's happening? What happened?
So basically, I created a social networking app called Giggle that was for women only. It was inspired in part by my time. I was a screenwriter in Hollywood in a previous life. I'd experienced the Me Too stuff. Like, I was there pre-Me Too, and it was as horrible as you know, they say.
Were you personally a victim of sexual abuse?
Yep. Yeah, I was sexually assaulted in 3 meetings, specifically when they were in professional settings. And then there was stuff that was more in, like, sort of what you'd call social settings. But I literally was leaving a meeting with a producer who wanted me to write a script on spec, and he put his hand down my pants. And when I told people what had happened, they were like, great, he wants you to write a script on spec. And I was like, let's not get too excited about that. That's writing a script for free.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. I can get anyone. I'd be happy for everybody to write me a script on spec.
I can do that myself. But yeah.
And did those people ever, was justice ever sought for those people? Did you ever get closure on that?
No, and I didn't write the script because I didn't want to be in – I never wanted to see that guy ever again. And so, you know, you get called unprofessional. It affects your reputation, not his. So, I mean, it completely destroyed my career. In 2017, I was, like, laying in my bed one morning. I was just looking at the ceiling, and I was like, I am in an absolute pit of depression. I can't get myself out of this. But I just refused to give up the dream. I wanted to write so much. And so I was like, well, I'll go to New York. There's still industry there. I'm not giving up, but I'm just out of this environment because it was so horrible and toxic. And in hindsight, I probably should have moved to New York years before I did. It suited my personality a lot more. And I liked that there was lots of people doing lots of different things there. It wasn't just Hollywood, because that was, while it was intoxicating when I first arrived in Hollywood, it became horrible eventually, because you're sort of going, like, there is a whole world outside of this place.
Yeah. And so, yeah, you're preaching to the converted. I mean, I tried living in LA a couple of times throughout my life, but I've spent most of my adult life living in New York City for that reason, that there's something about a single industry town that can become quite claustrophobic.
Exactly. And so I loved New York, but I mean, I moved there too late. I was still sort of damaged. The damage had been done. And I physically couldn't write. And so when I came back to Australia, it was initially a 3-week holiday. And then this is in 2018. And then it became very apparent that I was broken. I was just a shell of a person. And so I extended the trip and I went into therapy to just try and cope, like deal with it and get some tools to just recover from what had happened. And two things that were said in therapy to me that sort of changed my life, I suppose, in a way. One of them, she made me realize that I wasn't able to write because I was basically having a trauma response, and my brain knew that writing put me into the rooms with these horrible men. And so it was self-preservation. So I physically couldn't write. I would sit at my computer and I'd have all the ideas in my head, but I couldn't articulate them. And my livelihood was dependent on being able to write.
If it's any consolation, as a victim of writer's block, that sometimes happens to me even without being sexually assaulted. So the sexual abuse is maybe a cherry on top, Sal, but not a necessary condition.
But the other thing she said to me was, you need a strong female support network in your life. And it was just this light bulb moment of like, she was right. Because, you know, when all of the Me Too stories started to come out, the thing that was really clear was all of these women, we didn't know it was happening to everyone else, because the experience is very isolating. Places like Hollywood, these very sort of competitive industries, and also big cities are sort of isolating by design. And it just really resonated with me. I was like, if we'd had a place to sort of share these experiences just with other women, or just to talk to other women in general to like help recover, in what she said, I was like, you're right. And so when my mum and I were just having a drink like a few nights later, and I was telling her what I was sort of learning in therapy and what had been said, and that it really sort of stuck with me. And it was my mum who eventually in the conversation said, oh, we should create an app for women. And it was sort of also off the back of me telling her about when I moved to New York and I had to find a room to rent. I went on like roommates.com and things like that. And there would be guys saying things like, you know, if you can live here rent free if you walk around naked, or do you want a boyfriend as well, or like foot fetish stuff, like just really gross stuff. And I was like, can there be one part of my life that does not involve sexual harassment? Like the indignity of finding a room to rent is horrible enough. And so we were like, oh, why don't we create like a female-only roommate app so that, you know, you just don't have to deal with that kind of stuff. And then we sort of were like, well, there's other things. Like we sort of started to scale it a bit and like there's other things that women need it for. And so we just went like, it was just in general of just being able to connect for whatever reason that a woman wants to connect to other women. You basically have a female-only space in the palm of your hand. So it was actually really easy how it all came together. Like we did a family and friends investment round. We've never gotten past that. We designed the app. We developed it, built it, and that took a year. So all of 2019. And then it was on the App Store and Google Play in the beginning of 2020. And we were doing beta testing for it and like just ironing out the bugs, because it still had bugs and our security features weren't, you know, proper yet. We hadn't turned everything on. And what I now know to be trans rights activists, I didn't know that they were a thing at the time, found it. And we woke up on the 7th of February, 2020, to thousands, like I'm doing like in the like 10,000 men on the app writing they'd written kill turf profiles. They'd inundated the App Store and Google Play with 1-star reviews. I'd never heard the word turf before, so I had to Google what that meant. I was being called transphobic. I had no idea what was going on.
And at this stage, did the app have any overt policy about trans women?
No, because we had basically, I didn't know all of this stuff that was going on, but I'd heard just, you know, from being alive, these talks of like inclusivity and trans. And so I was like, when we were putting a policy together, it was, we had a trans inclusive policy, but I don't actually know what I was thinking at the time of who I was including. Because now that I know what I know, I was including females with a trans identity who have always been included, are welcome. Because to me, actually, that would be gender identity discrimination to say that a female couldn't come onto the app because she had a gender identity.
And just to clarify, you're using the word female there to include trans men, people who were a female at birth who then transitioned and now present as men. But but what was your policy? I'm just wondering what raised the ire of these protesters in the first place? Was there something? How did they come to notice Giggle?
I don't know, but my assumption is that to create a female-only space, you have to have gatekeeping. Otherwise, how is it female-only?
Sure.
So our gatekeeping was basically all you would have to do to use the app is you have to type in your phone number because every user needs an anchor to make something work. It's the same for everything. Like when you have to set up an account with an email or whatever it is, but we chose phone number. So it was the only sort of information we'd have from someone. And then what you'd have to do is take a selfie and AI would scan that selfie. Now, when we discovered that that was something that existed, like I didn't create this, I at the time, this is 2019 me, went, well, that's fantastic because we all know who's male and female by looking at them. That is a human skill we have. And we take a billion selfies a day. So this is like the least controversial way to do it. I could not have been more wrong. So I'm assuming that that was the problem because there was a lot of, you can't tell if someone's met a woman by looking at them. And I remember at the time, I didn't know. I was like, what are you talking about?
And just to clarify, this was a third party, software development company that you found. How did you find that this thing even existed in order to?
True research. Yeah. No, it's a big company. Lots of different places use it.
And they would just take in the billions of photos that exist. They know that they're meta tagged with male or female.
Yeah.
The AI compares this photo to all of the photos that have ever been taken of anybody and makes a judgment about whether this is a male or a female. But then, as I understand it, there's also a human factor that comes in on top of that at Giggle, where if there's some dispute about that or if the AI can't understand, you can step in.
No, totally, because like technology is faulty. And we had it set to 94% accuracy because by the time we had done testing, which we had not done yet in February 2020, we hadn't finished. By the time we had done testing, 94% accuracy was the one where unless a woman was taking a really blurry selfie, it would let her on. Or sometimes this is actually a great example. See how I've got a white wall behind me and then I've obviously am like pale skinned. That what it could sometimes trip up with the AI that it would think that it was a photo of a photo because there's not a lot of depth of field here.
Ah, right. Okay.
Yeah. And so
if people are listening to the podcast, they can come and see Sal's beautiful face on YouTube by watching. Subscribe to the show, everybody. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Leave a comment and a review.
Yeah. So rightly or wrongly, we'd made the decision that basically if we didn't want women to get denied, but if a man occasionally got through, we'd just manually remove him.
And also, just out of interest, you're talking about February 2020. Like, what happened when the pandemic hit and all of a sudden everybody's wearing masks?
Well, they weren't in their houses when they're just taking a selfie.
Okay. Some people were. I knew people who were wearing triple masks even when they were...
I don't remember. I don't know.
Alone in their apartment.
Of masks. I'm not
okay,
sure.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so basically, like, at the time, I was like, what a non-invasive, like, well, that was just such an easy way of doing it because that was just, like, it incorporated just that basic evolutionary human skill that we all know. Like, we walk down the street and we can tell who's male and female.
So usually.
I think that's, like, literally 99.9% of the time. I don't even go as far to say 100 because the tiny few exceptions to the rule really don't disprove it. And so I just didn't think that it was controversial at all, but I think that that is what bothered the trans activists.
Right. So they start parachuting. Go ahead.
I said that the fact that it was for women. Like one thing that's really important to understand here that I did not know, but has become very clear to me, when you do something just for women, the trans activists are immediately angry about that. So I've been introduced to this in a very, very big way, but so I will actually say we did nothing wrong or nothing that should have annoyed them because females with a trans identity have always been welcome. So to say it was trans exclusionary or that we're transphobic is actually forgetting the 50% of their demographic whose biological sex is female that we were including.
It's just park that for a moment because you know that that's not what they're complaining about. They're not complaining about the fact that biological females who are trans because then they now regard themselves as being male can't use the service. They're talking about the fact that what they want the definition of female to include people who were biologically male at birth, or as they like to say, assigned male at birth, mm-hmm. who now have undergone surgery, present as female, pass as female. That's the cohort of people who they want included in the broader cohort of females that you object to. So at the time, what's giggle mostly being used for in 2020? Because I had originally heard this story reported as it was a female-only dating app.
Yeah, so it wasn't being used for anything because it wasn't launched yet. We actually had to just sort of, because of that, what had happened, we had to sort of just really quickly get it all together and kind of.
But when you were saying that there were like, you know, one-star reviews on the App Store and Google Play and stuff like that, that only happens post-launch, right? Or does it?
Well, it was on the App Store and Google Play because we were beta testing it. We hadn't announced it as a thing of like, hype, come and discover this to be used. Like,
So before before anyone's even using it in earnest, there's already a backlash.
Yeah. No, completely. It hadn't even, like, we were cancelled right out of the gate, without a doubt. And because when you have thousands upon thousands of one-star reviews, you go into an algorithmic black hole. It's all like, I know this now, but at the time I was very optimistic, we'll get out of this. But it's actually almost impossible to get out of that because you then can't market the app. You're at the bottom of the bin.
And it doesn't show up as readily in people's searches for, you know, women's social media app or something like that. It'll be below 15 other apps if it's got all one-star
reviews. Below 30, yeah.
So, when does the app ever get traction? I mean, does it ever become, in 2021, which is the period of time during which the person who's suing you is concerned about, what is the nature of the app at that point?
So we had made the decision in 2020, basically after this first attack and I was introduced to all of this stuff and I started researching and reading what was going on so that I could basically, you know, all the trans activists were saying, educate yourself. So I did. And for lack of a better word, became a raging TERF from it, which most people do when they educate themselves. I said, because my mum and I are the owners of the company and it is basically just us. And I said, well, this is so preposterous what's going on. This will pass. Let's just tread water and just sort of just have it just sit there. We'll just tread water. Eventually we'll be able to do stuff. And I honestly thought it would just be a few months. How wrong I was. So that was basically our decision. And so we were still just treading water. We made it.
Treading water by meaning that the app's available, but you're not pushing it, promoting it. You're not doing a big.
We're not doing anything. It was, we made sure that like we could run it as like cheaply as possible because, you know, there are just expenses with running an app in terms of like servers and whatnot. So we were just making sure that we were just being as economical as possible while it sort of just sat there and we waited this out.
And was this a self-funded thing, Sal, or were there investors who you were accountable to?
We did a family and friends investor round.
Oh, right. Yeah, you said that. So, but they're probably somewhat more forgiving in terms of the timeline of returns than a professional investor might be.
Yeah. I mean, with startups, it can take like, you know, it can take a trajectory for a startup can be 10 years before, you know, like great stuff happens. So, you know, we're still well within that. But yeah, I mean, this is definitely not the journey that anyone expected because everybody invested into an app for women.
Right.
Pretty much knowing what a woman is. And so by 2021, it was still just there. It was just there. It was building up. There was like a few thousand women using it by this point. So it was starting to kind of work, you know, in the way it was supposed to. And it is often referred to as a dating app. It had a lesbian dating platform within it because, of course, it does. It's a female-only app. So, of course, you would cater to that. But it was a... It was for women in general. Like the only prerequisite to use it was be female. And yeah, you could find roommates, you could find freelance work, emotional support. There was like a female only like Twitter style forum. I mean, we had a place where you could find pen pals if that's what you wanted to do. We tried to think of everything that why women would want to connect. There was even actually a place to connect on the basis of gender identity because when I was introduced to this, we added this category afterwards. I was like, okay, well, we'll try and cater to the females who have one. Like I actually was trying to do the right thing on the basis of sex still. So, you know, just that was just sort of always my thought pattern. It's like, you know, I don't believe in gender identity at all, but I also don't believe in Islam. And we did have a category in the app for Muslim women to connect. So it's we didn't judge anyone's thoughts or anything.
And so when was its peak? When was the peak of Giggle's use?
There isn't. I mean, there just isn't. It's just the.
It never got off the ground in a way that you wanted it to.
No, it's never gotten off the ground. Like, hopefully, its peak is still to come. Like, I mean, it's offline at the moment.
And just in terms of the, and so when did it go? How long has it been offline for?
So it went offline in August 2022. So by that point, we'd been treading water for such a long time, and technology changes, and you have to do updates and whatnot.
Yeah, of course.
And we can't go and do huge new builds like X can while still running it. We are a tiny little startup with not much money. So we decided it was a hard decision, but we were like, okay, we have to do these updates. We will take it down and then we will relaunch. And maybe hopefully by that time, it was more like when we get to launch it in a few months, we'll have some control over it for the first time ever. Like it can be on our terms and we can really.
But you also knew at that point that there were court challenges coming?
So what had happened, we can go into the details, but in August 2022, no, because the applicant had withdrawn that initial case. So
right.
We had sort of been sitting there at the time going like, did we win because we stood our ground? Like we had to sort of just take it as a win. And so we were just sort of trying to move on with our lives. But what happened is he refiled in December 2022. And so that stopped us from relaunching it. So we haven't relaunched it. The app currently is offline. No one can use it.
Right. Quickly, in terms of the dating component, and also I'll just do an aside so that people aren't confused. You're calling the applicant a he. Yep. I'll refer to her as a she. It's a person who was born a natal male, and we can get into the details, but basically this person 7 years ago in 2017 changed her physical appearance to become female, started using female pronouns, picked a female name, underwent gender surgery in 2019, changed her birth certificate in 2020, and is now has a birth certificate that says she's female. You have a principled objection to that, so I won't won't dispute your right to call her a he. But if that's confusing to the listener, then that's why there's a difference between the gender that Sal and I are using. So, and in terms of the dating component, because I find this interesting, are you gay or are you straight? That was always just a fringe component of what you regarded as being an app that was designed for predominantly a sense of community among.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say a fringe component because, lesbian dating is just as important as anything else, and also. You could be a lesbian on the app and not be there for dating. You know what I mean? You could.
Yeah, sure. No. I just mean numerically, it's always going to be a small minority of the overall cohort of women. Maybe. Except for in the fevered dreams of guys who watch a lot of lesbian porn. Okay. So the applicant joins Giggle. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong. In 2021, mm-hmm. uses it and passes the AI mm-hmm. test as a woman. Uses it for some number of months throughout the majority of the year?
No. The only reason he was not detected is because he wasn't using it.
Got it. Okay. But he's an active user.
He'd gotten past the AI, which, as I said before, not unusual. A man would do it. Sometimes if we're having a lot of men coming on, trying to come on. But remember, even like throughout from 2020 to 2022 when it went offline, those attacks where thousands of men would try to get on happened frequently, roughly once a month to every 6 weeks. It was constantly under
attack. When you say thousands of men were trying to get on, do you make any differentiation between trans women, in other words, men who live their entire lives as women, versus men who are just sort of trolling you because they want to, take up arms against you and they live as men and they regard their gender as being male and they're bombarding you to be cheeky?
Because I can't tell someone's gender identity from a two-dimensional photo. When you've just got thousands of male people bombarding you, their gender identity is even more irrelevant than it would be in my normal life.
Well, no, but you'd be able to, I mean, in the sense that the applicant was, managed to get past the AI, obviously there's a difference between someone who presents with traditionally female characteristics like long hair and dress and lipstick and a dude with a beard.
No, not at all. I'll give you an example. This one was mortifying. So Steve Baxter, who's a well-known venture capitalist, who's been a great mentor to me, He, when he was first sort of just circling just to sort of see what we were doing, he took this up. He got on. I was mortified. The biggest venture capitalist in Australia just got on. It looked like my company was an absolute failure. No, occasionally a man would get on. Technology is not perfect. The human eye works much better, and we would just remove them. So,
right, but I'm also just interested in when you talk about being bombarded by men. Does that mean that there was a coordinated campaign amongst trans women to bombard you, or amongst men?
No idea. I mean, sometimes the only thing we'd know about them, like, you know, there'd be...
But how did you know then? Aren't you looking at the pictures?
Yeah, but I mean, like, first of all, like...
I mean, I can tell when... even if I were to grant you that transgenderism doesn't exist or something, I would be able to tell when a guy is trying to pass as a woman or not.
Sometimes you could have a guy that's wearing makeup, but is it not offensive to assume that he's not just a guy who likes wearing makeup? Because lots of men like that.
Well,
Why would I make an assumption on his gender identity?
I would understand that cohort of people is probably different from males who present as male.
Yeah, but my point is to explain how it all works. So, like, for example, if I'm getting thousands of men trying to get on the app, and like something, all I could tell about them, other than the fact that they're male, is they were wearing, you know, like gaming headsets. So we'd assume that like something was happening, like a Discord server or Twitch or something like that, that there was like an orchestrated.
Okay, so you do suspect that it was dude bros being cheeky.
Yeah. So for the most part, I'm not making the accusation that like trans women were constantly trying to bombard the app. That's not the accusation that I'm making. I'm making the accusation that male people, for whatever and whatever demographic from then on that they belong to, would often do orchestrated attempts. I don't know anything else about them.
Yeah, right. So the suspicion might be that they're super social justice, like dudes who are trying to telegraph their virtue to.
Yeah,
and it by taking down some.
There's men from all around the world as well. I mean, there would be, we'd have times where it'd be like the attack would be coming from Bangladesh. You know, just.
Then maybe there are also men's rights types. Like, you know, it could be anyone. You could attract. Sal, the good thing about you is you attract a lot of hate from a lot of different groups. So it could be, you know, it could definitely also be the men's rights people objecting to women having a safe space. All right, so who knows?
Yeah, I'll say this. I think that I received more dick pics than any woman on the planet. Because they would quite often just take pictures of their penises. And just
doing that. It's you know, it's a... So kill us. We're primates. You know, we're proud of our wieners.
I will say this. The behavior of men towards a female-only app has proven the need for it. They've not done a single thing to, you know, dampen my suspicions that a woman-only space is actually completely and utterly necessary online.
That's interesting. So talk us through the timeline. So this the person who's suing you... It comes to your attention that she's a biological female, biological male rather. You what? Cancel her account?
Oh, so I don't even remember removing him from the app because it wasn't an odd thing to see a man and go, "Oh, that's a man," and just remove. So I don't even recall it. It was not an event in any way, shape, or form. There's many other men that I've removed from the app. That's completely normal. What then became a bit odd in terms of my journey with it is I think it was October 2021. He called and texted my phone. I don't know how he got my phone number. Because, as I said, the only like anchor that we had for any user was the phone number. So just because he'd texted me, I just typed the phone number into the Giggle server. And so the onboarding selfie came up and I was like, that's clearly a man. And I called my dad and I said, this guy that's blocked from Giggle has called and texted my phone wanting to be on. I don't remember anything else what he specifically said in that text. My dad said, you know, block.
You don't have it saved, the text?
No, because my dad said to the advice, because it really creeped me out. It really actually scared me. And my dad said, block his phone number and don't tell your mum, because my mum does live in fear. She sees all of the death threats women get for speaking out about this sort of stuff. And so it was one of the, you know, when something like sort of creepy happens and then you just try and forget it didn't happen. So I did that. I just forgot that. I was just like, oh, yuck. And I'll just, you know, move on. Then in January of 2022, I got the Australian Human Rights Complaint for alleged gender identity discrimination. And at this point, I was 15 weeks pregnant. So it was just a, it was a horrible, we were also the app was under attack that week. And they were calling it racist because a bunch of white guys with gamer headsets were leaving reviews saying that they were black women who weren't allowed on. Now, there was no racism at Google. We had to, from that, those accusations, both Google Play and Apple contacted us. They had to make sure that we weren't actually doing something horrible like racism. We were able to prove it in minutes and it was fine. And they let us on our way. Like when you create an app, you actually have to pass through a lot of stuff in the App Store and Google Play through each build as it's being built. So that's why, like, literally at no point did even Apple or Google say, like, during the building process of it, like, oh, hang on, there's a problem here. Like, that's why it was such a shock in February 2020 when suddenly we were under attack and I just never heard it. I had no idea that this stuff was going on. I was in a Trump-hating bubble on my online experience.
It was a weird time. Early 2020 to early 2022, I think.
Just sort of like 2018 to 2020 even, like, you know, Trump was in office. It was like, I can't stand the guy. And I, you know, there was like so many people, like, you know, and I'd lived in America. And so I sort of had like such an affection for the place. And I, like so many others, was just trying to like read as much to understand how this happened. Mm. But even in that, no point led me to, oh, there were people that were kind of against all of this stuff a bit earlier or whatever. So yeah, I just...
No, it was it was a heartbreaking period. I also just realized that you were, during the pandemic, you were in Queensland, not in California. In my brain, you were in Los Angeles, hence the comment about the mask. You certainly weren't wearing masks in Queensland because there was basically no virus in Queensland. And also, you dodged a bullet somewhat in terms of the bushfires. I'm just mapping the calendar on here. In 2019 to 2020, the other really traumatizing thing that was happening at that moment, at least for me, I had 2-year-old twins at the time, so I remember being in a sort of baby haze, not that dissimilar probably from your pregnancy haze, which was that Sydney was, the skies were dark. You couldn't see the end of the street for all the smoke. There was ash falling on the cars. Everyone was just raw and traumatized, and houses were blowing up, and like thunderstorms of fire and flame were just leaping out of the bush. It was totally surreal in early 2020.
I live on the Gold Coast, and I always say to people, like, this is like the best part of Australia to live in because it's so relaxed and cruisy, very, very stereotypically Australian. And yeah, we don't really get any disasters, and we don't have great white sharks. We have tiger sharks, but we don't have great white ones.
I'm moving to the Gold Coast. Okay. So that's that period of time. And then... So now we're fast forwarded to, and we won't bother going into the details of the fact that there was this court case that then expired, and unless you think that's particularly salient, I'm more interested in what's happening now.
Yeah, it's just relevant in terms of for people to understand why it's gone on for so long. So had he not withdrawn and then refiled 6 months later, this actually would have already been heard in the federal court. It would be resolved by now. So it's just gone on longer than normal. That's all.
I see. Because there was an initial application to sue you that then was not pursued, that expired, the individual had to come back, resubmit, and now what's happening this coming week is that let me just read the claim, right? This is from the actual claim. This is the statement of claim. Since on or around 2017, the applicant has presented her physical appearance to be female, used the female name of Roxanne Tickle. The applicant underwent gender-affirming surgery in October 2019, by which her gender as a woman was affirmed. The applicant's birth certificate, issued by the Queensland Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages in or around January 2020, states that the applicant is female, and the claim is that from February 2021 to September 2021, the applicant enjoyed ordinary access to the Giggle app. Around September 2021... you used the override powers to restrict access, and that means that the applicant was treated less favorably than cisgender women because the applicant is a transgender woman. That's the claim of discrimination, which will be heard. And your defense is what?
Well, so a few things. So first of all, I'll just say that even the description of the experience is incorrect. I don't have the ability to restrict access, like to limit access, sorry. It was either you were accepted or blocked. So I blocked access. And it was on the basis
of sex. But that's semantic, isn't it?
No, because to say that I limited features and limited the enjoyment of the app or whatever is just actually, we just didn't limit the features in the sense of like, oh, you could only do some things or whatever. So it's just,
I see.
Probably semantic, but it's just also just incorrect. If I'm going to talk about this correctly, I'm going to talk about all of it correctly. Then also, in terms of the usual enjoyment of the app, this person actually didn't make a single connection or talk to anyone on there. So I don't quite know what enjoyment was being had. And so part of our defense of this is a constitutional challenge. The reason for this is what has happened is gender identity was put into the Sex Discrimination Act in 2013. Now, under the normal Sex Discrimination Act, which was created in 1984, female-only spaces were completely non-controversial. In fact, the act itself was the exemption to allow them to go ahead, so long as it was like, you know, for a specific aim, like, you know, proper purpose or whatever. And to be honest, I can't think of a female-only space that wouldn't have a legitimate aim or purpose.
And just as an aside, do you know if male-only spaces were also carved out as legitimate in that act, or was female spaces specifically mentioned?
The Australia app, the Australia Club, the Melbourne Club, these male-only spaces continue to flourish.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if they're actually illegal.
No. Okay. Well, none of them are illegal, because I think it's really important to remember the law is currently muddled and unclear. It hasn't been given clarity, which is what we're doing, what this case will be doing. It's not that female-only spaces are not allowed, although the AHRC is very much pushing that narrative, but they are wrong.
I mean, this whole thing is interesting because there's also this parallel case that I don't need you to comment on, but I will cover, where there's this women's only exhibition in the museum in Mona, the museum in Tasmania, and that they're being sued by a man who was not allowed, not a trans woman, a male man who was not allowed into that exhibition on the basis of that being unjust. So, like, there is this whole... yeah, question of, like, is it legitimate to arrange ourselves according and divide ourselves according to sex? But let's park that for the moment and say that it is.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think that, say, like, gay male dating apps are really important. I think, and that's on the basis of biological sex. I think that's really relevant. I think.
I mean, in a strange way, if it weren't the case that we could have women's only spaces and men's only spaces and gay only spaces and, you know, redhead people's only spaces, then this whole case would go away anyway, because according to the Human Rights Commission, the person who's suing you is a female. Wait, if you were to regard the person, like, there's a parallel potential case here, which would be to say, even if the person is biologically male, they should be allowed in because you're not allowed to have a female only.
I get what you're saying. It's just, it's hard to articulate it, but essentially the concept of female only spaces aren't actually in dispute. It's whether this male person is female. That's what's in dispute.
Got it.
So the necessity.
So it's nothing to do with sex per se. It's to do with gender identity. But I'll come in a moment to the Australian Human Rights Commission's submission in this case, which is really revealing and was actually quite shocking for me to read. But carry on about what your defense is.
Well, yes. So basically, because gender identity was put into the Sex Discrimination Act, which has muddled it, because gender identity is either going to be the opposite of your biological sex, so it would be a male person saying that they're female, or it's got completely detached from it. So say you're going to say, like, you're non-binary or a cloud gender or gender fuck or whatever, you know, all of these neo-genders that exist. So when the Sex Discrimination Act was put into law in Australia in 1984, it was because Australia had become a signatory of CEDAW, which is the Convention of the Elimination of Discrimination Against All Women and Girls. It's got a really long name that doesn't completely spell CEDAW, but that's what it is, which is essentially an international bill of rights for female people. It was written in 1979. And with Australian law, how we can create laws is through it's the heads of power and the other thing that I always forget, external affairs power. And so basically we've got to stay within the conventions of that have enlivened the law. Now, CEDAW is for females and is a document for female people, which is what our Sex Discrimination Act is based on, which is based on biological sex. In 2013, under the Gillard government, they took out the definition of biological sex and the definition of man and woman, and they put in gender identity, and they did put in a definition for it, but it's effectively like gender identity is gender identity. It's a very circular definition, like something mannerisms. It doesn't really explain anything to what anyone could understand what it is in any practical manner. So part of our defense is the fact that gender identity, whether or not it should be there, is one part, like, you know, sort of a question that lots of people could have a different answer to. But it needs to be established that sex takes primacy in the Sex Discrimination Act, because that was the intention of the act, and that's how it stays with CEDAW. Otherwise, if it's not, it's in breach of CEDAW, and you can't be in breach of something.
And does the Australian Sex Discrimination Act mention by name the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, that international treaty?
Yeah,
or is it doing its own thing?
No. What's actually quite unique about Australia and New Zealand, actually, so is that we incorporated CEDAW into our laws pretty much in full. Our Sex Discrimination Act is CEDAW. Lots of other countries like this, because it's got 189 signatories around the world, so it's only really the bad, like the countries you'd expect not to sign it that haven't. But like, say, the UK, for example, and Canada, they are both signatories of it. They have ratified it in law to a point. But Australia is quite unique. We really just sort of took CEDAW and went, crossed out CEDAW and put Australian Sex Discrimination Act on. Basic kind of thing, obviously. That's
right. And that was, and we did that in 1979 when this law was done, or this is the 2013
law? No, so CEDAW was written in 1979. Australia became a signatory in 1983. And then in 1984, we put our obligation to CEDAW into effect in law by creating the Sex Discrimination Act in 1984. And then in 2013, they did amendments to take out the definition of sex and put in gender identity.
So your argument is you can amend when the amendment took place to the 1984 law in 2013, it was illegitimate or unconstitutional because it was tinkering with a 1979 international convention that made no mention of gender.
Yes.
Got it. It's a twisted and tangled sort of process, isn't it? Like, the underlying question, obviously, is whether or not it's legitimate for biological females who were born with two X chromosomes to identify themselves as a group distinct from
the rest of the population. I don't think it's too complicated. I think that that's really relevant. I think it's really important. I mean, realistically speaking, we're in the very early days of women even being mentioned in law, and we all know what it was like when we weren't. It wasn't great. It didn't work. Feminists actually did a lot of work to make sure that women were included in law, and specifically that women were included in law, like every demographic has had to do, like how gay people have had to do that. And I'm not opposed to people with gender identities, if that's what they believe in, being protected in law, having the freedom of belief to that, being able to congregate as just that group if they want to. That is, I'm not disputing that at all. I'm just saying, in addition to all of that, female people also need to be recognized. All of the reasons why female-only spaces are necessary, all of the reasons why females need to be recognized in law, have not gone away. Nothing has changed. In fact, it's only got getting worse at the moment because of this gender identity, that we're even having conversations like, what is a woman? We all know what a woman is. Now, someone can go and identify whatever they want, but that's not my problem. My problem is being told that I have to believe it too.
When I first heard about this case, Sal, I assumed that it was going to be one of those frivolous cases which you hear about sometimes, where like there's the case of, you know, some trans woman who really makes no attempt to present as a woman and might be a big, burly, you know, bearded dude who goes to a, you know, Korean spa salon and mm-hmm. asks for his penis and balls to be waxed at a female-only place. Yes. Yeah, this is a true story that I'm citing. Yeah. And then when the Korean attendees of the women's-only spa refuse, this person takes them to court saying they're discriminating against trans women, right? So there's a... I mean, I'm enormously sympathetic to what you've gone through in being attacked by men. I'm enormously sympathetic to women who find themselves the subject of frivolous lawsuits from men who are trying to make it impossible for women to find safe spaces. And I'm enormously sympathetic to the pushback against some of the confusing and extreme gender ideology that has been floating around that is damaging not only women's interests, but also, as I say, as a man who's married to a man, gay interests as well, in the sense that there's a rising opposition to gay marriage and to gay rights, I think partly as a result of the extreme overreach of gender ideology, which regular people feel worried about. They're worried about, you know, having to swallow the idea that there's no such thing as men and no such thing as women, and that your gender is just something you pick and choose. Yet, there's a small cohort of people who, in almost all times and almost all places, have from a very young age exhibited this sense of gender dysphoria, which puts them in the wrong gender body. And I acknowledge that those people have really had a really shitty time. They've tended to have to do really dangerous jobs like prostitution, and they've been excluded from workplaces, and they've been called freaks and perverts. And we got to figure out what to do with those people. It's no good to insist that they carry on in the same gender that they were born in, I don't think. Is there a way to incorporate them into our thinking about sex that doesn't force you to swallow the entire extremist line?
Of course there is. First of all, though, it is established, you've got to establish that sex is real and and in some cases, really relevant. So if there is, you could have a woman's space, like a woman plus trans woman only space. I'm just not going to be the one who creates it. I'm not going to stop someone from doing that. Like, there are 13 or 14 apps on the App Store right now that are exclusively for trans people. I don't have a problem. I self-exclude from them. Like, be on your merry way. Enjoy yourselves. My whole point is that female ones have to also exist. We're actually, the conversation, I think, is always so incorrectly framed as, you know, it's this marginalized, oppressed group that we've got to have the most empathy for here. They got laws changed in stealth. The Australian government made gay people practically beg to get married. They knew what biological sex was then. And now it's being reframed as marriage equality because they don't want to bring attention to the fact that it was actually same-sex marriage. They're trying to eliminate that reality from the history of it. I'm completely opposed to that. I'm terrified that gay people are going to be held responsible for what's happening because it's not gay people's fault. Gender ideology is in direct conflict with sexual orientation because it is saying that you can just change your sex and that you, if you are someone who is like a gay man or a lesbian woman and you don't want to be with either a trans woman or a trans man, that you have a genital preference. That's homophobic. So on top of this horrible ideology being very misogynistic, it is inherently homophobic. It is telling little feminine boys that they're born in the wrong body, that there's something wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them. They're just adorable feminine boys who some like ballet and dolls, and many of them grow up to be amazing gay men. That's when I started to learn what this ideology actually is. I was repulsed by it. I think you can believe it if you want, because there's lots of different ideologies in the world that I really don't like. But I do accept that we live in a society where people think or believe things differently to me, and that's fine. So in terms of how can we move forward with this, it's not us that actually has to do the big change. We're saying, live your life, have fun, be who you want to be. I don't care. I only care if you're going to try and make me restructure my perception of reality, of truth, and of everything in law that women require. Then I've got a problem with it.
What, so is there a compromise to be found in the fact that some cohort of some portion of this cohort are not just people who've drunk an ideological Kool-Aid, but who feel this medical issue from a very early age, this gender dysphoria, and then do everything they can, including surgery? Like, I think there's a plausible case to make that, for example, people who have penises shouldn't be in female prisons, especially if they've been perpetrators of sex crimes, for example, which is something that can actually happen in some jurisdictions that have gone all the way down the, you know, the trans rights line, that you'll have trans women with... What's that, sorry?
Australia is one of the leading nations for it. We have the most amount of men in women's prisons per capita out of all of them.
Is that right?
Yeah, in Australia, in Queensland women's prison, it's approaching 10% of the women's population. Women's prison population is male.
So assume that you get people, assume that you win people over in saying that, you know, women who are in prison, biological women, some proportion of whom will have been victims of sexual assault at the hands of men themselves, should not be forced to share that environment with female identified people who have biological genital, who have male biological genitals. Is there, I'm just confused about why we're unable to then make a distinction between that cohort of people and people who have from the earliest possible age felt like they're women and then presented as women in primary school and then gone on puberty blockers in their teens and then had the full operation, and they now have everything you could possibly want out of a woman except for the, unless you get out a microscope and look at their chromosomes, right? They have a vagina, they have boobs, they wear makeup, they pass as women. What they want is what people who fought against discrimination throughout all time want, which is not just to be, oh, you can have your little club if you want it over there, but to be included in the legitimate larger group of citizens.
Yeah, I'll start by saying a woman is not a medical condition. So you don't get to become a woman because you might have a medical condition such as gender dysphoria. Woman is an adult human female. It's a category of people. You can't have an operation to become it. I actually think it is utterly cruel to tell a vulnerable and distressed person that by taking hormones and having surgery, they will become something. They actually are not becoming in reality. And this is what I was saying before, where it gets really, really important in terms of how much biological sex does impact our life. Sexual orientation is a thing. When you're saying that somebody like completely looks like a male person, completely looks like a woman, which is so rare, it almost actually is never the case, but we're always advertised with the very few who sort of, at least in photographs, might pass well. You don't get to then go and say that biological sex is irrelevant when that is sexual orientation. Is very relevant and dictates some of the most important decisions we make in our lives, like who we spend our life with. Now, there are some people who are, say, bisexual. They don't care. Fantastic. Great. I'm not saying, like, but for those who are not, biological sex in that context is going to be really important. So furthermore, this concept of living as a woman is incredibly offensive to women. You don't live as a woman. You either just are or you're not. And this is, again, when the framing of this conversation has always been so wrong. It's always been to be kind to this demographic of people. But that kindness is a cruelty to women and girls. And no one's talking about it. It is really offensive and insulting to women to say that not only can men be women, sometimes they can be better women than we are. Or that a little girl has to just accept that either the boy is in her change room or that he's now on her sports team. You've got to remember that every single time a male is included in a female sport on the basis of inclusion, it means that at least one girl is just missing out, just based on numbers. And she doesn't have anywhere else to go. There's nothing else she can go and identify into. It's one of the things about this whole ideology that I think is so insidious is that how much it lies and forgets about females in general. because females with a trans identity actually rely on their sex-based rights. That's how they still play sport. Majority of trans men play on female teams. Same with females who are non-binary. They play on female teams because of the reality of biological sex, that women aren't as strong and fast as men. I wish we were. We're not. We just have to play with the cards we've been dealt on that one. Whereas men who claim to be women go on to female teams. Or if they claim to be on non-binary, they go into the female teams or competition. The only people who actually benefit from gender identity superseding sex in law are men who claim to be women. Every other trans person does not. We don't cater society to non-binary or cloud gender or any of these other ones. They are relying on their sex-based rights when they want to do sport, when they want to be in a specific facility. They need their sex-based rights. So even the concept of gender identity superseding law is itself incredibly misogynistic and forgetting about the many of the trans community who aren't male.
I mean, sport is a fascinating one because it does seem that we're being asked to accept something that everybody knows isn't true, which is that men are stronger than women on average. You know, you always say, well, but look, there are certain, you know, women who are stronger than certain men. If you superimpose the bell curves over each other, there's a difference. And that difference arises predominantly via going through puberty as a male body. So if you've gone through puberty in a male body, your bones are stronger, your muscles are bigger, you're taller than a counterpart who went through puberty as a female. It's extraordinary. It's also extraordinary to me that, you know, it's controversial for someone like Germaine Greer to say that there's something fundamental about womanhood to be found in growing up as a girl in a sexist society, that, you know, you're never truly going to be a woman unless you've experienced being a girl in a sexist environment. I think there's something true about that that has to be recognized in honoring what it means to be a woman. And yet, when you talk about there being actual harms to cisgender women, or as you would call them, women, from the blurring of these boundaries, I don't know. Do you ever just get paused that, like, maybe it's a storm in a teacup? Like, I don't, not the whole thing. I mean, the specific question of whether or not an app, like, if you need to, put a little label on the trans women on the app so that nobody gets fooled, and then there's
that would be treating trans women different to cis women, which is an accusation.
Yeah, who knows? But I mean, where's the harm? In other words, like, where's the? I understand the harm in sports. I understand the harm in you know, prisons. I don't really understand the harm in just having a live and let live. Like, I understand the indignity. I understand the emotional frustration. This ideology that has gone so far that you just want to push back against it and say, I'm drawing a line in the sand. Fuck you. Women are women. Like, fuck off. I kind of get that. I get that emotionally, but I also don't understand, like, rationally why it's such a big deal.
Yeah, many, many people, especially men, don't. And it sort of, I think, highlights the difference between men and women in one part. I mean, it's like, what's the harm? What's the harm in just expecting women to just, like, sort of move over and allow men to come into our spaces and sport and our scholarships and awards and everything that has been sort of...
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say allow men to come and take scholarships. I'm saying a person who presents as female, has a female body, and wants to associate socially with other females.
But they don't have a female body. They have a male body. It has had cosmetic surgery. We talk about stuff like, and the truth matters or it doesn't. And that's actually the harm here. But I'm obviously, I've come into this for defending female spaces and women's rights. But my North Star with it is truth, reality, freedom of belief, and freedom of speech. We don't have a functioning society without them. And it petrifies me to think, if they can force people to believe, men or women, what's the next thing they can force people to believe and then act on?
Okay, you're right that there's a distinction that we need to introduce here, which I should have introduced earlier, between sex and gender, right? And this will bring us to what I find shocking about the Human Rights Commission submission in your case. But do you think there's a difference between sex and gender? In other words, between the biology of the mammal or the creature, you know, in a very sort of clinical biological sense, and the way that we present and play with the expression of that difference in culture.
So biological sex is obviously just male or female, small gametes for large gametes. Like that, and it's, you know, it's even in plants, it's in animals. Okay, this is very, very understood. Richard Dawkins explains it really well. He says most things actually do exist on a spectrum. Like, you know, when does tall become short? When does night become day? When is young old? There's lots of great philosophical questions to be had there. Male and female, the uniqueness of it is that it is completely binary. It's that doesn't exist that much in the universe like it does with biological sex. And it's over species. Yes, I mean, a tree can be male, a flower can be male or female, or an elephant and a human being. Gender, there's lots.
And just
lots
to, I'll just make a point that we understand that there are rare exceptions to that. There'll be people, there'll be intersex people, there'll be people born with,
they confirm
bunches of chromosomes.
They confirm the sex binary. So they're not exceptions. Like, I think it's really cruel to say that they're an exception, like they're not male or female, like there's some other. No. All of the disorders of sex development, which is a medical that is an actual medical condition, they confirm the binary. They still are actually male or female people. There's just some disorders of development that have happened in utero. And sometimes
I don't think that's true, but let's just park that dispute, because I've spoken to biological experts who say that, you know, if you've got a cluster of XY chromosomes and you've got, you know, a tiny little micro penis sticking out of a vulva and stuff like that, it can be, to all intents and purposes, impossible to establish what
that person still is, male or female.
Well, let's move on from that, because that's not the current state of the science. But even if it were, I mean, I don't think anything hinges on that question. To hear the rest of this conversation, go to uncomfortableconversations.substack.com/listen, and you will get your own personal premium podcast feed with at least 3 extra episodes of the podcast every month and heaps of extra stuff, including the remainder right now of the fabulous conversation you've just been hearing. If it was worth listening to this much of, don't rob yourself of the rest. Pull out your phone right now and search for Uncomfortable Conversations with Substack.